Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Wheel Talk Podcast. My name is Abby Mickey, and we are here to talk about women's professional road cycling. I'm joined by Lauren Rowney.
G'day, everyone. I'm first today. In many ways, more than one way.
Well played.
I told you last week you'd be first. You gave you a week heads up.
That's true. Sorry, my mind is elsewhere. I'm thinking about other things, like other winning moments.
She's going to rub it in for the whole hour.
Oh, God. I just realized what she's talking about. Oh, we'll get to it. Today, we've got two World Tour races to talk about, Classic Bruges de Panne and Gent-Wevelgem. And then we've got some big races coming up this week with Tour of Flanders on Sunday, plus Dwars Door Vanderlyn coming up in the midweek. Lots of good stuff going on today. Before we dive in, I do have a corrections corner for myself, which is embarrassing. I'm not going to lie. I am embarrassed about this one. However, I did go back and look at the article that I sourced myself from, and it said ITT for the first stage of the Vuelta. So it's my fault for not double checking the sourcing from the Vuelta's website. However, I got corrections cornered in the Discord by one Sarah Gigante that it is actually a team time trial to start the Vuelta. So all of our excitement about the time trialists having a 16K chance to prove themselves before the Olympics, unfounded. Sad.
That's a real shame, isn't it?
I mean, when is there a next opportunity then, actually? In one of the smaller tours, I guess. That's about it.
Like, usually they have one at the Sex Toys race.
Is that still going to be Sex Toys this year?
But
let's hope so.
Is that it? Does that race still exist, actually?
I don't know. Need to go double check that. It's usually after Flanders.
Yeah.
But maybe, yeah, because we have Roubaix now. They just don't.
Doesn't slot in because, yeah, it goes Roubaix and then 1 week and then I think the Ardennes start. It's all pretty back to back.
Yeah, that is correct. It is pretty quick, the Ardennes after Roubaix. I have the calendar pulled up. Let me just tell you. So Dwars Door Vanderlyn coming up this week as far as non-World Tour races, and then we have, yeah, it's not on. It does not exist anymore. And Festival Elsa Jakobs is now like split into two 1 days. So that's not even a stage race anymore.
That usually comes what, end of April? Something like that?
Yeah, that's April 27th, 28th. But yeah, no Sex Toys race.
I think there'd be a few riders that would be quite happy that doesn't exist anymore. And then there'll be quite a few that are quite sad.
Yeah.
It sucks for the non-World Tour riders, to be honest. Because it was such a good race. Like, was it last year? Oh, no, that was Elsa Jakobs where Heidi Franz had a really good ride. But, like, every once in a while you have, you know, the World Tour teams show up. And sometimes they'll send their newer riders who need a little bit of experience. And then you have the non-World Tour teams. And for them, yeah, getting to go. Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool. So, yeah, the last year, it hasn't even been on for, like,
Yeah, not since Ellen tweeted about it.
Yeah, not since it was sponsored by Sex Toys has it been on. That's really
And then
cool.
She went got
first
pregnant.
Pro race.
She got pregnant.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, man. Math is mathing.
It works. The science works.
Yeah, so corrections corner of myself. No ITTs that we know of as of yet, but we'll definitely keep everyone posted on that because surely there's something before June, before the Nationals kind of crop up. Another corrections corner. I'll move us right into Classic Bruges de Panne with my next corrections corner, and that is that Chloe Dargart will indeed race the Classics race this season. We had Classic Bruges de Panne on Thursday of last week, and it was a good one. There was a lot of attacks. There was no wind, so the peloton made the race aggressive on their own, but it came down to a bunch sprint won by Elisa Balsamo, second Charlotte Cool. There's, yeah, a good bit to dive into. Let's talk about the attacks. There was no wind, so the peloton was keen to split it themselves, and there was a lot of moves from FDJ was pretty aggressive. They had riders off the front probably that got the biggest gap of the day, a couple up there, and then EF Education Cannondale also were pretty aggressive on the day, but DSM Firmenich Post-NL were not having it. They pretty much reeled everything back in and to get ready for a sprint, and took the lead on that. Cool, just didn't have the legs.
No, that's what she said, I think, in her post interview, which was quite frosty. I think she was disappointed. You know, like, as a top sprinter, you want to go up against the best in the world, and with Weber's not there, it is always a bit of a shame. But at the same time, you'd be thinking, okay, this is an opportunity. Balsamo is clearly on form. But in that sort of finish, after that kind of race, I think people definitely would have put Cool above Balsamo. But Balsamo was just so cool, calm and collected. And you could just see totally in control, even though DSM did everything perfectly for Cool. She was just surfing wheels, and Balsamo put herself in the right position and she was just quicker.
I think DSM took control a lot in the race and then started their lead out train quite early. They probably did need to do that. And they didn't necessarily run out of riders, but you could tell that Balsamo just looked so much more comfortable, and she was surfing, but she also had some really good team support around her. It was predominantly Hansen and Caponi, I think, that were they kept moving around her, behind her, in front of her, and just making sure that she was coming out when she needed to and moving up when she needed to. And yeah, I was really impressed with both of those two riders too. They did a really good job without having done like a proper lead out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, it was certainly an active race in general, but I found it a bit of a boring race, I hate to say. It was like, if you're going to rewatch the highlights, I would only watch the last 10K because I don't know. I don't think there was too much else worth noting.
Yeah, those races, yeah.
When there's no wind in
this
race, it's
a non-event.
It's just a flat race. The only real technical part is like the final bit where they do the roundabout and then they cross the tram tracks and ride into town. And that was the only technical bit. And that was actually also the only bit where we saw DSM Firmenich Postanel actually lose it. Like, going through that roundabout, they got totally sucked up by the rest of the peloton. And that's when Lucinda Brand really took over for a little trek, leading the peloton and keeping the pace high. But that was a moment for me when I think DSM, you saw that they did so much work throughout the entire day, but didn't save enough for the end, because their lead out was fine, but like you said, Gracie, it was way too early. And because of it, Cool had to go too early. And Balsamo basically just like, she got a free lead out from DSM going into the finish, because the team did a great job, but Trek was also down one rider. They only had five to start. And so they didn't have strength in numbers when it came to the final like 1K, 2K to make sure that Balsamo had that lead out, but she didn't need it because all she did was sat on Cool's wheel. And when Cool went, she just increased the speed for Balsamo to be able to come around her. And I feel like that's when it's worth pointing out the importance of a sweeper, because had there been another rider sitting behind Cool at that point, Balsamo would have had a whole nother rider to come around in the sprint. But because Cool didn't have that, Balsamo was able to just follow the lead out train that DSM had put together for Cool. Yeah, had a faster sprint in the end.
Yep. Well, I'm glad that there weren't. The risk with these races when there isn't a lot of wind is obviously the crashing. So I'm just happy to see that there weren't any like really epic crashes and people getting injured, because we all know what it's like when you race in the north and there's not wind and these roads go from quite wide to narrow, and particularly with a finish like that where everyone sort of thinks that they have a chance at the win, and sometimes putting themselves in tricky positions or places they shouldn't be.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, Lauren. I was also glad to not see some really nasty crashes, because this race in particular have had some decent ones in the past.
I think the attacks, like, well, they weren't super useful in terms of tactically attacking for the win. They did make sure that the pace was decent in the peloton, decent enough that there wasn't a ton of bunching within the group. So I think there was a benefit in that with the attacks, even if, you know, FDJ Suez sending riders one by one off the front, they weren't going to win that way. I think, like, even without the wind, that's the only way that this race isn't going to come down to a sprint. There's no factors that are going to lend themselves to a solo move. And like when we have had a solo move win in this race, it's been because of wind.
And a very, very good time trialer. Well, time trialists.
Oh, she's great. We'll talk about her in a minute. So a couple just other notable, I think, finishers in the sprint. Daria Pikulic taking third was pretty impressive, the human powered health rider. And she won the first stage of Tour Down Under last year, and also was it Qinghai Lake at the end of the year. She bookended the season last year with wins. So we know that she's got that kick on her, and she's done track in the past. But to come third behind Kuhl and Balsamo is like a completely different beast.
And I also just want, with that notable mention, her teammate Lily Williams has been really good this spring in quite a few races, and she was very helpful in that finale for Pikulic.
Yeah, she's been brilliant.
Yeah, Georgia Baker, another trackie in fifth. It's a pretty good performance from her. And Chloe Dygart, who we said wouldn't be racing any spring classics, came into this race for her first spring classic. I guess it's good there wasn't any win for her. And she ended up sixth, which is impressive. I feel like she's such a, like, what is she? Obviously, she's a time trialist. Like, she's world champion on the time trial bike. But she also just keeps, like, throwing herself into these sprints and having, like, decent results. Yeah. I mean, obviously, that's her world tour win from last year was kind of a sprint. But to come sixth in Bruges de Fana is,
I feel like that's really that tracky background too, right? With bunch racing and just the power the trackies have. Like we see with Georgia Baker and Alex Manley from Australia, when Alex had that incredible season in 2022, they also have that ability to really sprint in the saddle, which a lot of roadies don't, you know, pure roadies don't learn that.
Yeah, and they don't get gassed as easily by continually moving themselves up in the finale. Like sometimes a sprint isn't the last few hundred meters, it was the last 5K. And you really see on a tougher finale, those riders that can still have that power ride at the end after doing effectively a team pursuit almost type effort. Mm. And you can see that's where she's really good. And I think something that she's got is actually a bit of lack of fear or something. I don't know how quite to describe it, but she doesn't necessarily have the best bunch skills, but I think she also just doesn't have a lot of fear, and that really helps, particularly for someone that's had such a horrendous injury or string of injuries, really. I'm impressed with her that she's putting her nose in the front of these really hectic races. So having the form and the power really helps, but I think also her mental attitude or whatever it is. Like I have heard from other people that she's quite special in lots of ways, in that what makes her such a good athlete because she can push herself super hard, but she probably, just from watching her race, some of these races that we haven't seen her in before, you're kind of like, wow, I don't think she's that scared. And that's actually probably a huge asset to her steep learning curve.
She does seem to be missing that reflex.
I'd say Puck Peterson is a bit the same in a different way, but like she just doesn't. We spoke about it last week, actually, that lack of fear to put yourself out there, which is just admirable, I must say.
Yeah, it really helps.
And speaking of Canyon Tram, I just feel like they haven't been that present in the races, if you think about it. Like not in the force that they were last year in terms of organization and really there. Like I found myself, I don't want to jump to get more like him, but just wondering where are they? Where are the riders? Because
I was actually going to say that you should be the one pronouncing Gent Wevelgem because I pronounce the G.
It depends. Yeah, Gent Wevelgem.
Yeah, we're gonna talk about Canyon Sram. I want to talk about them when it comes to Gent Wevelgem because they weren't really there. It was only Chloe in the finale for them, and for her coming in and this being her second race and not having any teammates around her was definitely a notable admission in that final group. And I think for them, their power is really going to come in the Ardennes. Once the Ardennes happen, like they'll have Kasia, they'll have Xavi, they'll have Ricarda Bauernfeind. I'm not really sure when Antonia Niedermayer is going to come onto the scene. I think that she's pretty much going to be reserved for the stage races coming up because that's where she really excels. And I wouldn't be surprised to see her in the Ardennes, but we're not going to see those riders racing, maybe Flanders, but we're not going to see them racing like something like Paris-Roubaix Femme, for example. Maybe Chabi. She's pretty versatile. But when it came to Gent-Wevelgem, it was another bunch sprint, but a lot happened leading up to that bunch sprint. There was an early move that came back, and then everything regrouped before the climbs of the day. Lotte Kopecky was the most aggressive rider over those climbs, making two selective groups over the Kemmelberg, the first ascent and the second ascent, which is the harder direction of the climb. Both times Wiebes went with her, and they were able to kind of isolate a group of favorites, including Pfeiffer Georgie both times. Mm. She rode incredibly well in those moments. Puk Pieterse was there for the first one and then bridged up for the second one. And we also had some little Trek riders in there with Aliza Longaborghini bringing Balsamo up to the first one. And then Aliza and Shirin were in the second one, and Balsamo was notably absent. But in the end, it did come down to a reduced bunch sprint won by Lorena Wiebes, with Balsamo taking second in a photo finish and Chiara Consoni finished third. A lot to talk about. I want to start with SC Works Pro Time and their tactics. Somebody brought it up in the Discord with a cheeky emoji. Excited to hear what we have to say about the SC Works Pro Time tactics at Gent-Wevelgem. And I do want to talk about it. I think after the race, Kopecky said that she attacked on the Kemmelberg because she was bored. It wasn't in the tactics to try to break the race apart at that point, but she said that she was keen to get the racing going. She wanted to test her legs before Flanders, and she was bored. So
it didn't even look like she attacked. She just rode.
Yeah.
She just looked so much.
She was like nose bridging.
Oh, it looks good to watch, but you're just like, damn.
How do you do that?
Everyone was just like all over their bikes.
I think with her attacks, like, the thing to note here is that Wiebes just like flawlessly followed her. For that not really being the plan in the race, like, Wiebes was on it, and she looked really good over those climbs for someone who is on the sprintier side. Like, we've said it before that she's not a sprinter, a pure sprinter, but she is on the sprintier side of the spectrum of rider type. And she had no problem following Kopecky over those climbs. And they really, like, in that chunk of the race, they made sure everybody knew that they were the strongest team on the road. And they really put everyone in a tricky position. Even in that, especially in that second group that they formed, Marlon Reusser was in there as well. So they had the numbers with three. Balsamo and Kuhl were both not in that group, but they still opted not to work and let it all come back together. And I think that this is the tactics that people want us to dive into a little bit, because they weren't keen on having a selection. They just made selections, kind of made the rest of the race look like a joke, and then let it all come back together anyway. And I think that that's a combination of, you know, putting everybody in a position where they're like, oh shit, SC Works Pro Time, they have the legs today. But also their confidence in Wiebes was so strong that they were like, yeah, it can come back together. Like, yes, we know Balsamo is riding super well right now. We're not concerned. This can totally come back together and we can still win. They knew that they could win out of the small group, but they also knew that they could win out of a larger group. And I think for them, they said after the race, a combination interview with Reusser and with Kopecky, that they let it come back together because if it had been that small group, then riders from that small group, Puk, Lisa Longaborghini, Shirin, they would have been attacking and making it harder for SC Works, and Lotta and Marlon Reusser would have had to be reactive and chase down every move that went, versus if it got brought back together, they knew that DSM would do a lot of the work and Little Trek would do a lot of the work, and they wouldn't have to do as much pulling on the front, which is exactly what happened. They played right into everyone's hands, because once it came back together, it was Ellen van Dijk on the front pulling everything back that Movistar had to throw at them. And so SC Works Pro Time, while watching the race, you were questioning their tactics. I don't know. I don't think the tactics were really that crazy. I think it falls into exactly what you'd expect from SC Works.
I thought the same. I wasn't questioning it particularly. Like, I think that they had enough information about what was going on behind. And like you said, like, they had most situations covered. I think not having Balsamo in that next main breakaway as they finished the circuits was the main point where you could contest that they should have ridden harder to keep her away, because she's obviously one of the main riders in super form at the moment that would have been the one of the biggest rivals for Wiebes at the finish, and especially because Wiebes hasn't had the perfect run the last 2 weeks. She's, you know, had a big crash a couple of weeks ago, so that would have been my only point to pick apart of, like, why wouldn't they just stay away from Balsamo? But they must have felt good and, yeah, trusted that they still had it. It was bloody close at the end, though.
Yeah, that's just the only point I was going to say. That imagine if Balsamo had just pipped her. So I think that's the closest we've seen between those two.
Between Wiebes and, like, anybody, really. She's usually bike lengths ahead of everyone.
But she was forced to go, I think, earlier than maybe what she's used to. I don't know. Like, Capecchi, you know, was sprinting and
I want to
break down the sprint.
An experiment. I'm going to send you guys the video of the sprint, and I want us to watch it together. Kind of analyze it on the go. This is going to be fun. We'll see how this works. No forward knowledge about whether or not I was going to do this, just fully in a classic Abby fashion. But I think one more thing to point out with SC Works and that second group where they had the numbers. They may have had the numbers, but I don't think that they felt strength in those numbers, because even with those numbers, they still, Roycer's not on her best form. And so with her in the final 30K having to react to any move that, like, Puck and Little Trek would throw at them, which they absolutely would, if it had been that group of eight that came down to the line together, like Pfeiffer, Puck, Elisa Longoborghini, and Shirin, the four of them are just going to be relentlessly attacking SC Works. And Capecchi and Roycer can react and pull them back, but how many times will they be able to do that against four? And so I think that they were looking at that group thinking, not only, like, the numbers that they had and that there was maybe one and two from other teams. They may have had the most riders, but they didn't have the strongest cumulative wattage. Also worth mentioning that Roycer got disqualified with 2.5 kilometers to go for riding super dangerously on the sidewalk, like weaving in and out of
spectators. I wondered what happened there. I was like, did something happen and she got pushed onto the sidewalk, or did she choose to end up there? Because it was a bit odd.
I think she got pushed. There was no... I went back and watched it again, and they didn't actually show the moment. They just showed her, like, weaving in and out.
That was weird.
But yeah, that
was pretty actually wide road.
The timing of that too, you know, was perfect, because Grace had gone.
So perfect.
Ellen Van Dyke had run out of steam, and I was like, this is it. This is it. She could do it. But then I think Grace is just not quite where she needed to be in terms of form.
I thought she had.
If it was Grace 2 years ago, or 3 years ago, for sure, she would have held it. But I think, you know, with her planning for the Olympics and everything, they're holding her back a little bit. But damn, I was like, this is perfect. You've got the two, like, big dog engines of the peloton. Van Dyke's not quite where she would be either compared to a couple of years ago. This is it. But yeah.
I was thinking the exact same thing. I think she did attack in that almost that same spot a few years back.
Yeah.
And really held it as well. But I was wondering, I was like, she probably knows that Van Dyke's just run out of steam, but I wonder if she knows what's happened to Roycer, because it was the perfect moment.
that was like everything is going to be a bunch sprint. All right, we're getting ready for the sprint. Holy crap.
There's very few riders who can pull that move and, like, pull it off.
She also really capitalized on Movistar being so aggressive, because they were sending, like, they had, like, Emma Florti, like, they were just one-twoing. And then as soon as they ran out of steam, Grace went. And it was like, no one was expecting it. Whereas I feel like a year ago you would have expected it, right? Because it was off of that string of strong performances by her. But this year you wouldn't expect it. And it was just, like, perfectly timed. Impeccable timing. I was gonna say, if DSM had one less rider, she would have done it.
Yeah, I was only thinking maybe 10 or so K before that. Oh, I wish Grace was kind of going a bit better because yeah. I feel like I'm missing her a bit this spring, but like she's got
me
different
too.
objectives this year. So when she did go, I was like, ooh.
Yeah.
Can we talk a little bit about Movie Star before we go into the finish?
Yeah.
Because I'm intrigued. This is not the first time that we're seeing Norsgaard race like this. And I'm just wondering if she's purposely trying to create a different version of herself as a rider and not just put herself into the sprints. And she has admitted in some interviews recently that she's not the fastest. So, yeah, it was interesting. But I don't know if it was the smartest play because they only really had two riders that were going 1-2 off each other.
I think they would have needed to have Elena Sierra there for that to have been pulled off. Yeah. Potentially. Well,
Sierra was there for the finish, so maybe she's the sprinter now.
I find that odd because Norsgaard, it was just 2 years ago, right? She was getting that whole string of top podiums, not like necessarily winning, but she was definitely one of those riders that were like, she's young, she's got that awesome track background as well. Like, she is one of those sprinters, definitely a sprinter who can do well in a harder race. So I found that surprising. And I did wonder if it was because in Bruges de Panne as well, she came seventh, I think. And it was like, okay, well, we're not going to go for you this weekend. So you're going to go into that more attacking role again. But I find it a bit of a shame, if I must admit. And at least
me too.
Use her then to, I don't know. I don't know. I just find it a shame. I was really surprised, actually.
Yeah, like she could be a really good lead-out rider for Sierra.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If she doesn't want to be the sprinter or, yeah, they don't think she can be. Like, I don't know. I just felt like it was odd. I
feel it's wasted.
I feel like it's an interesting place that Movistar are in, right? Because they're trying to adapt the team to do well in these races, and they have some really strong riders. Like Flirty Mackay is one of the most experienced riders in the peloton when it comes to these races. But for Emma, like, yeah, she said last year at the tour that she knows she can't contest with the likes of Wiebes, Kuhl, Balsamo in a sprint, so she is adapting her style. But then where does that fit in? Like, how is she able to utilize that adaptation to win a race? And the tour went super well with that stage win for her and kind of switching it up by being in that breakaway. But for these early season classics, I think it is a big question. How can she use that new found style of riding to the betterment of the team? And I think, Gracie, I think you're spot on where, like, you throw a couple attacks, but it's clearly not working. Change gears and ride for Sierra. Because she's got a good kick. She's not going to win in the sprint, right? But you could still get her into fifth.
Yeah. And especially, like, while this race has been won by solo attacks, they've usually been because there's a crosswind and that the group has scrambled, put each other in the gutter. That's how other riders have won. And it's more often than not a bunch sprint. So yeah, like, I just, it's that last 20K run in is just fast. It's actually really hard to get away as a solo rider or even a breakaway of a group of four or more. So yeah, I just was getting a bit annoyed because I'm like, well, maybe they can't win in a sprint, but this is also not a good tactic. Like, I just don't know what they were trying to get out of it.
Yeah, well, did Sierra even end up, did she end up in the top 10 and get some points in the end? Yeah, okay. Well, still the result.
At least I know because she's on my fantasy team and she did have some points when I updated. Oh, God. I know we're going to talk about it, but it's just like embarrassing.
Hey, I thought you were part of Team Lauren now as well. So
I'm Team Lauren. Actually, when I was looking at your team, Lauren, I decided that you have the best team.
I'm pretty sure Elle is listening to this and she'll be going, I told you, Lauren's going to come with the goods later in the season. But I'll savor the moment now.
It's not even later in
I didn't
the
think
season.
I would jump into the lead, but yeah, I guess with these one-day races, they do offer quite a lot of points for the win.
So Sierra and Sierra ended up sixth behind Maria Giulia Confalonieri. And I think like if she'd had a little support, then maybe she could have even beat Kuhl, because Kuhl did not, she didn't really feature in the sprint, which we'll get into in a second. But I do, yeah, I think it's interesting the situation that Movistar is in and how they've kind of failed to adapt to the racing style and how they're going to feature coming up, because like how is Emma going to do going into the hillier classics, and what kind of race really suits Emma now, because it used to be these races. And I don't think it's not these races. I think she still could be incredible in a race like Gent-Wevelgem. It's just trying to figure out, because she's an amazing time trialist. Like she can time trial. So when she was going off the front, say like her and Grace got away together, you know, then maybe you've got a conversation. But yeah, okay, I want to go into this sprint. So I sent you the video of the race finish, and I want to watch from 3 minutes and 39 seconds
in or to go
in 3 minutes and 39 seconds in, like right as Grace is about to get caught. Tell me when you're ready and we can hit play.
I'm ready.
All right, let's go play.
So Pfeiffer Georgie has Kuhl on her wheel, but then Capecchi slots in.
Capecchi.
This is the moment. The moment that Capecchi is going and she kind of swings over and hooks. It's like they're
magnets. Well, and like you can see Kuhl is still pretty composed, and then she tries to shift across, but she has to stop pedaling.
Yeah, she kind of gets not quite boxed in, but just doesn't have any space.
Yeah.
But she definitely ran out of legs.
There's so many interesting things in this sprint
to focus on, actually.
Yeah, there's like so much going on in this sprint to focus on. You've got, you know, Pfeiffer Georgie with an incredible lead out for Kuhl. And then you have Capecchi coming from like the other side, going full gas and kind of crossing the road and like magnetizing on to Wiebes. Capecchi wasn't leading Wiebes out at that point. Wiebes was behind the DSM train. But then as soon as Capecchi kind of swung over, she just picked Wiebes up exactly where she needed to be. Balsamo once again was surfing the wheels, and she just hooked herself right onto Wiebes. And then when it came to the sprint, like, I love this about women's cycling. Wiebes so easily could have shut the door on Balsamo.
That's what I thought was going to happen.
And
yeah,
it would have been so easy for her to just like move slightly, and Balsamo wouldn't have had any room without anything dangerous, just kind of like limiting Balsamo's ability to get through. But she didn't. She just kept sprinting and out sprinted Balsamo with the bike throw. And you have those things going on. And meanwhile, behind that, you have Consoni following Balsamo, which meant that as Capecchi peeled off, there was no room for Kuhl to get through. So even if Kuhl did have the legs, which I don't necessarily think that she did at that moment, she had no room to get through Consoni, who was following Balsamo's wheel, and Capecchi, who was peeling off the front of Wiebes. So there's so many moving parts. I thought it was just an incredible 500 meters.
Consoni did exactly the same thing in Bruges de Panas, just locked into Balsamo, because I think she knows that that's the way towards a podium, at least, if you can't get over the top. I mean, it doesn't always work out to lock onto a rider. But yeah, I just rewatched it again.
I'm rewatching the overhead as well.
Yeah, I was going to say like 6.5 minutes.
That's the better angle, actually.
Super.
Than the front on.
Yeah. Because then you really see like Sierra just kind of ran out of steam a bit too. She's seated sprinting. But between like.
Man,
Consoni had such a good sprint.
But if Balsamo had one more meter, man, she was coming at her.
I think like Balsamo threw her bike too early. Is what it looked
like. No, you know, this is exactly the duel in the finish that we've been wanting to see this season, that we spoke about weeks and weeks ago, was this sort of finale.
I mean, Wiebes may have not been beat in a bunch sprint, but that's about as close as it can possibly be.
And when you go over it again and again, especially that aerial shot, there's milliseconds in it. Like Weebus is in the best position and Capecchi has put her there. Weebus jumps first. Balsamo is like reacts straight away, and you can see Cool just reacts just that millisecond too late. And that's what puts Consoni's wheel just in front of hers. And Cool then feels boxed in because Consoni's handlebar is just that little bit ahead. So you can see she not only had to stop pedaling, but actually just the moment before that, she thought about that, that she had to stop pedaling. She hesitated because she'd already jumped just a touch too late, and she was worried about crashing or, you know, being in a bad situation. So yeah, it's super interesting.
She's going to be so frustrated. Cool. Just missing Bruges de Panne, missing the podium here. And now we head into Dwarsdorf, Flandern and the Ronde on Sunday, which are just races she's not going to feature in. There will be more opportunities for her coming, but as in terms of like the big spring races, it's done now for a rider like that. But it's good for Pfeiffer Georgie, because we can talk about her and how brilliant she was. She was the only rider able to follow Capecchi and Weebers on that final ascent of the Kemmelberg. So I'm very excited to see what she can do this Sunday, and hopefully the full support of the team. I wouldn't see why not around her.
I think if Cool had just latched herself onto Pfeiffer's wheel in that lead out, that she would have at least gotten second, because we know she can sprint. Like, we know she's a really strong sprinter. But if you watch that sprint again with like Pfeiffer's leading Cool out and Capecchi is able to come in between the two, and that's the moment that it's all done for Cool, because Capecchi comes onto Pfeiffer's wheel before she moves over in front of Weebus, and then Cool is screwed because at that point she is behind Balsamo. She's not even on Weebus's wheel. She's all the way back behind Balsamo's wheel. She's three wheels back. Like, you're too far back at that point with 500 meters to go. So I think like had she just held on to Pfeiffer Georgie's wheel in that moment, that it would have been a completely different race. But she wasn't in the right position at all after that incredible lead out by Pfeiffer. And yeah, I think like you said, Lauren, like going into the next races, like this was Cool's moment, and she'll have plenty more during the season, and I'm sure that she's going to get a win. And she's not had the easiest run into the season, getting sick before a UAE tour and everything. So she's getting her legs under her still. And I think last year when we saw her on such incredible form, it was coming off of those two wins at the UAE tour over Weebus. And she would have come into the season, the European season, with a lot more confidence. And at the moment, like you could tell in her interview after Bruges de Panne that she was not thrilled. And so she'll pick it up. Like she'll be fine the rest of the season. She'll get a win for sure. But now watching how Pfeiffer Georgie rode like in the finale, but also throughout the entire race, going into Flanders, going into the Ardennes, like she should be the focus of the team now, because she's clearly riding super well. Also, she's on my fantasy team, so I need her to give me some points.
So what? I can't hear you. Oh, I want that for you. I want to see her up there. Like, she's a great rider. She's really excited.
Now that you're winning.
Yeah, I can be this way. You know, I want to see other people win. I'm not lose. I'll just screenshot that, because I know as soon as like the likes of Demi come, and then, you know, Capecchi's not in a worker's role and so on and so forth, the tide will change.
You had a great week, Lauren. You had a great week.
I'll just hold on to that for now.
Yeah. Just enjoy it.
Just
enjoy
bask the win. In it.
Yep. Gotta celebrate the wins.
Should we actually talk about the fantasy comp?
Why not?
The results after these two races. We got Lauren Rowney in first with Gracie Elving 400-ish points behind. Matt is in third. Tills is in fourth. And I am still holding down last place, me at the back. But Lauren, with what did you have? Four in the top 10 of Bruges de Panne? And then second, and you also have Consoni, so second and third at Gent-Wevelgem, plus others. I mean, just an incredible week.
It was a good week. I'm proud of the team, must say. I so wish that the writers
like to our strengths.
They knew the way that we talk about it. I'm actually catching up with Ina on Thursday, and she'll think this is completely dorky knowing her, but I'm just going to tell her that her writers are carrying my fantasy league team.
You have a good team. Gracie, how do you feel? Bumped into second by Lauren. Feeling strong?
Yeah, I'm not worried.
Okay.
No, I think it's good. I am worried, actually. I feel like I'm definitely not going to win this at the end of the season, but it's fun. It's funny. It's a good little highlight. It's actually, I'm finding it difficult to like pick winners before, like for race previews, because you just want to pick your own people. Just this new level of bias comes in.
Or you do me and you go completely unhinged and pick Femme Van Empel, who then doesn't even rise up to the start of Game Rumble.
Oh, that was sad for Jumbo. They really were a team that didn't. They haven't really featured since the opening weekend.
I mean, they weren't even at they weren't even at Drenthe or Binda, and took a team to Normandy instead. And then they come into this race and they've only got two in that final group. And it was a really hard race, but still, like, you have to wonder what's up with Voss. Like, she's probably, I know she's been at altitude, so I wonder if she's really targeting the races coming up, if we'll see her at Flanders. Paris-Roubaix is obviously a huge goal for her, but it is, for a team that went through such upheaval at the end of last year and has such lofty goals, it's kind of, I don't know, just a little bit disappointing to not see them factor a little bit more. Like, yeah, maybe Movistar's tactics weren't, you know, the smartest at the end of the race, but at least you saw their jerseys. And, like, you can't really say the same for a couple of the other teams on the start line. So, Flanders coming up this week. We got Dwarsdorf-Vlaanderen, which is not a World Tour race, but usually has a lot of these top riders show up because they're there already and get the form going. We've seen some really awesome moves. I have like this one memory of that race when it was like Cashin and Annemiek van Vleuten attacking, and it was a great moment. So we got Dwars coming up on I think it's on Wednesday, and then on Sunday we have Tour of Flanders, Ronde van Vlaanderen, and this will be an awesome race. Obviously, Capecchi coming in the one to beat, the absolute top of her game, having a blast, putting everyone to shame on the Kemmelberg at Gent-Wevelgem. But we also have a bunch of the other top riders coming in after taking a few weeks away from the racing scene, like Vollering, I would assume would be at this race. Cashin Iwadoma, Marianne Vos, I have all my fingers crossed because I really need her to win if I'm going to have any hope of getting out of last place in this league. The Flanders is going to be great. I can't wait. It's going to be awesome.
Holy week of cycling coming up.
Flanders,
the best week.
Like Roubaix is awesome, but I still just think Flanders is the best race because of it's just like you got to be an all-round good bike rider and just pull all the pieces of the puzzle together. I'm pretty excited. I get to commentate it.
Yeah, Gracie, can you give us like a little preview? Let me just pick on the spot for a second. Can you give us a little preview of Flanders, like from a rider's point of view, the race in general, like what it takes, what to look forward to, a crucial moment?
I think just knowledge of the course is really valuable. Just knowing, you know, where to relax, but where to move up, especially like even like the exact moment you need to move up before some of the cobbled sectors. I think it's a bit of a fine art in some of these Flandrian classics, but particularly Flanders, because it's so hard and there's so many sectors. I didn't get to race it with the Koppenberg in it, but that's just one of many important sectors that you have to get right. It kind of has three phases. The first third is a bit more relaxed, but you still have to be careful about people crushing in front of you and just managing your own energy. The middle phase is becoming pretty crucial, and that's where you see that attrition starting in the bunch, and that's when things can come undone really quickly. And that third phase of the race that includes some of the most famous cobble climbs is where the race is won or lost, I should say. So yeah, sometimes it does come down to those last two or three, but we've seen lots of different styles of racing, but it's really in that last third of the race that you're going to see most of the action happen. I think there's a bit of controversy still about whether the Koppenberg should be in the race. I know there's lots of riders that think it kind of ruins the race because sometimes if you have a bad moment, your race can be over. And we have seen that the last few times. So I'm not sure about that. I'm a bit on the fence about it, to be honest. I think if I had to make a decision, I think it might actually be better to not have it in the women's race. It's not that the women can't race over it. They're very capable of getting up and over that climb. But I think sometimes the way it does impact the race leads us to a less good of a finale than when we get with previous editions. And that last 10K run in after the cobbles are over, I think is sometimes often an anti-climax. It's just it's a weird way to finish such a dramatic race. And I remember when I was in the front group in the finale, it's actually it's less boring because you're trying not to shit your pants because you're trying to figure out how the hell you're going to finish off the job. So actually, from that perspective, having done it as a rider and being in that finale to win, there's still an element of skill to that as well. And it's helps if you have numbers in that finale, in that group, to have someone to help with chasing attacks or have a lead out or something. So yeah, it's just one of those beautiful races that hopefully there's a nice day, there's a million spectators out on course, and the most complete bike rider wins. They're able to manage themselves over a very technical course that you can have one mistake, but you probably can't have more than that. So you gotta really be on your A game for the day.
That's a beautiful summary. I like the point about the last 10 kilometers, because I was just thinking it from an emotional point of view as a rider. This race is means so much to so many riders. Just to be on the start line can be an honor, because you know the teams are quite big now. So just to get selected to do the race in some of the bigger teams is a big deal. And then, like you're saying, Gracie, when the race goes to plan and you are in that final 10 kilometers and you're hopefully where you need to be, that's one thing. But then if the race didn't go the way that you wanted, it's a pretty sad last 10 kilometers, because it's this like realization it's over. And it is this very uninteresting lead into the finish. And the finish itself is a bit of a weird area, like for this really epic race to finish on that road. But that's what, my sort of interpretation, particularly if you're isolated and you're with just a few riders or in the back group or in the middle or something like that. It's a strange feeling. I don't know. Kind of feels like that part of the season is done.
Yeah, you can go into a state of grief in that last 10K if you are not in the front group. I think that's actually a really good thing to bring up, Lauren, because I've definitely experienced that as well, of being like, well, I fucked that up. Can we have a redo? And because before we had Roubaix, that was really like the
The
ultimate
last
spring
one.
race and the last one. So yeah, it was a lot of mixed feelings at the end of that race, and you had that good, boring last 10K to contemplate your whole career.
Oh, man.
it's gonna be a great one, and we'll be back next week to chat about it. Let's wrap this one up. I'm obsessed with I've been watching Welcome to Wrexham, the TV show by Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney. They bought a football famously they bought a football club in like North Wales in 2020, maybe it was 2021, a couple years ago. That was like a pretty rundown football club, and basically made the goal of getting it back into the leagues. I'm not going to go into football leagues because I don't, honestly, it's very confusing to me and I've been watching the show, but I've just powered through the first season and I absolutely love it. It has like, as you would maybe expect from somebody who made It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia and Deadpool, or two people that made those two works of cinema
art.
cinema art. It's like really moving. Like there are moments that are, there was like a whole episode in the first season about like the fathers in the team. And like there was one of the players talking about how having his daughter really changed the importance of football. Like it's still his job, but that it's not the be all end all. 'Cause he can come home to his daughter and she doesn't care if he's had a good game or not. She just is happy to see him. And I feel like that really resonated. And that whole episode was just like gorgeous. And then there's other episodes that are just like hilarious. And it's like this really great combination of like a lot of heart and learning about football and learning about this like obscure Welsh town. And the graphics of the whole show are really cool. Like they do like these translations between like Britishisms to like American to Welsh. And it's, there's like a lot of little things that make it really good. And I think I resisted watching it because I'm just not like a huge football person, but I've been getting more into it the last couple years with like people that I like that play and wanting to follow those athletes and those women. And also with the Kansas City Current team and their new stadium and that whole thing is like super freaking cool. And so with all of that, I've been getting more into football. And so I was like, fine, I'll bite the bullet. I'll watch Welcome to Wrexham. And
where is it streaming?
It's on Disney Plus.
Cool. Sounds like a real life for Ted Lasso, but like less about the coach.
It pretty much is a real life Ted Lasso.
I tried to find that, but then I realized it's like Ted Lasso is not on Netflix, or at least not in Belgium.
It's on Apple.
And I think in Australia it's on...
It's on Apple in Australia too. Oh,
yeah. Not with Apple. A part of that cool club.
Kimbers and I like tried to do a cull of all of the things that we pay for. And we got down to two, and now it's like blown out again because like there's just it's my conspiracy theory, like they're all owned by the same people and they just make you pay for all of them.
Do you know what gets me is like the 30-day free trial things, and then you forget to cancel the subscription.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that gets everyone.
I'm like, I don't know, one day away from canceling Netflix. I feel like I never go on Netflix anymore. They just churn out so much crap. The moment that they've aired the final season of Stranger Things, I think that I'm done with Netflix.
Until they bring out something good.
I think Disney is...
Next month.
No, because they canceled Shadow and Bone.
Oh.
They canceled Shadow and Bone after two seasons on a cliffhanger, and I'm never going to get over it.
Oh, I actually watched that because of you. Your recommendation. I watched that series. I don't really watch that much Netflix, to be honest. It's more like at the moment my son is just, he's into this weird, it's not a weird program, but like no one knows what the hell this thing is. It's called The Mighty Beam. And it's just like this, do you know what it is?
Yes.
This little Indian boy and there's no words spoken. It's just him living his life in India, which is quite cute. But he has this superhuman power strength. I'm laughing because it's just so ridiculous. Like, I can't believe that that's the choice of my son. Like, that's what he wants to watch. Like, on repeat.
What a legend.
Is it The Mighty Beam, like with an N or an M? Beam.
Beam. Beam. Mighty Beam. And oh, okay. I don't know. My husband found it last year.
Oh, so it's his name. Is Beam his name?
Yeah, his name's Beam.
Oh, cute.
I'm surprised you know what that is, Abby.
I don't know how. I feel like I like saw a clip or something and then did a deep dive.
That's what he's into. That's definitely not what I'm obsessed with. I'm actually obsessed with at the moment. I've just been like eating up all of Dr. Stacey Sims' information about... I'm just wanting to learn actually a lot, not that I'm going into menopause, but perimenopause and menopause and just everything around women's health and training and I think it's just so important to educate ourselves a bit more, just from some conversations with women I know who just have no idea about these things. Like, actually, as an athlete, I wish I had dived deeper into, tracking my cycle and understanding how that impacts my performance. Because as someone who had PCOS, I'm sure, there would have been a lot of signs in my training, like times, like for example, living in Spain during the summer, I just couldn't perform. I couldn't get through a training session, and I used to get really depressed about it. And I just having read Stacey's book Raw, the links between different parts of your cycle and how, like, if you are really impacted by the heat, how that can affect performance. And just, yeah, it's been interesting. I've been listening to as many podcasts as I can, and yeah, trying to get through her book.
Oh, that book's well worth a read for lots of people, mostly women, but I reckon a lot of men would get a lot out of it too. In Australia, the last 2 and a bit years, we've had a really great initiative through our Australian Institute of Sport called the Female Performance and Health Initiative, led by Dr. Rachel Harris. And there's some really good resources on the AIS website that is free to access for anyone. So if you want to look also at plenty of different topics within female health and performance. They're all on the AIS website. Lots of cool infographics. A lot of it's, similar to some of Stacey's work as well. It's all science-based and practical information.
It's kind of crazy that it's only recently that coaches are
Pay
starting to
attention.
take like your cycle into account when making a
Yeah.
training plan. I only had only the last year of my career did we start tracking my cycle and like customizing my training plan to around that. But it's like it kind of it's like kind of a brain or it's like a facepalm moment when you're like, why did no one why didn't you think of this before? Like, why hasn't this been the norm?
Yeah. I
Is really
think there were
lots of
reasons
just
for that, but yeah.
just so
Yeah.
many aha moments
That's a whole episode in
when just
itself.
thinking back, going, man, like, I mean, I was only ever coached by male coaches as well, and definitely didn't take in consideration the fact I was a female. And some of the like the one coach, the whole thing around intermittent fasting and everything like that. I don't want to dive into it too much. We should get Stacey on the show again, but yeah, that would be good.
And even if you're not an athlete, it's worth
Yeah.
knowing, upskilling yourself about your body and that you don't have to be suffering or in pain or not be on the right contraception or not know what your fertility options are. Like, it's for everyone, that kind of knowledge that we haven't necessarily had mainstream access to as women. But as I said, also men can benefit a lot. You can understand your partner better or the
Yeah.
women that you coach.
Gracie, you got any obsessions?
Always got lots of obsessions. I really tried hard to think about something this week, but I've just been on my on some of the similar stuff that I've already brought up. I'm very much in the third trimester now of being pregnant, so I've been learning lots about what my birth and labor may or may not look like. So I've been putting a bit of time into that, but putting in time into your classic nesting, doing lots of DIY at home. And that's been pretty fun. We're about to start some renos, which is not the best idea to leave it this late, but we're doing it anyway. I'm quite content at the moment as well with my new job with AusCycling. I feel like I'm still feeling really motivated and excited. So I feel like life's got a pretty good balance at the moment, and I'm enjoying just reading and watching TV and picking up stuff that you guys are obsessed with in the meantime and keeping myself pretty busy
I
otherwise.
love that.
So not the best answer this week, but yeah,
That's a great answer.
I've got enough going on at the moment that I'm enjoying.
All right. Well, we'll be back next week to talk about Flanders. Look forward to it. Thanks, you guys.